Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. Knowing through all, keep on going. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Praying for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's while I'm trying my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Standing by strength to perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turning for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. Welcome to another NDR Morrell production, Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And still, everybody, happy summer also. Hot. Well, I guess we say hot as hell out here, but it's okay. Like I said, I'm a heat beast. Summer don't bother me. It's wintertime that bothers me. Okay, so let me state the topics that we're going to discuss tonight. The first one will be police killed. The next will be all lives matter. And the third, just miscellaneous issues. Yes, that word miscellaneous always jumps out at me, just saying to speak a bit here about the word miscellaneous. I probably said it before, but for those who hadn't heard this little story before, a nephew of mine had come to me on an occasion with something he was reading, and he was stuck because of the word miscellaneous. He was in, I think at that point, what they call middle school. It used to be called junior high, but they have fifth and sixth graders now in that area of schooling. Anyway, he was reading something, and he got stuck on the word miscellaneous. So he came to me and said, "Uncle James," he said, "I'm reading this, but I don't understand it." I said, "What do you mean you don't understand it?" He said, "I'm reading this, but I don't understand who Miscellius is." I said, "Miscellius?" So I got the book from him. He handed it to me, and I read what he had read, and the word wasn't miscellaneous. The word was miscellaneous, and I had to tell him that miscellaneous, it's not a person, it's a word that describes an assortment of things. It made things much clearer for him when I told him that. I'll never forget that. And even now I have to chuckle when I think about that. Indeed I do. But anyway, moving right along from that. And being that I did mention that nephew of mine who came to me with that issue, just yesterday I had a situation, a good situation, wherein another, well, a niece of mine had given me a text earlier in the week asking me if I would assist her and come with her and take her to a place in Queens. I live in Austin, she lives in the Bronx. The Queens is further away, just like that. Anyway, I said, sure. And, to go to Queens, she was going to Queens also to pick up a new car that she has bought. And I said, sure, I'll do that for you. So sure enough, we did that on Saturday, which was yesterday. But the thing that stuck out to me is the fact or situation that when she was younger, 7 or 8, I had taught her to ride a bike, to ride a bicycle. And I couldn't help but think to myself, isn't that interesting? I'm the one who taught her to ride a bicycle at that young age, and now I'm taking her to get her first car. I thought that was interesting. But then again, that is just an attestation to my character, so to speak. Good guy that I am. Even though it may not seem like it in the show based upon issues that I bring up. But, hey, that's life, and we have to live life, whatever. And then again, also, another situation with another niece of mine. It happens to be that these situations that I'm telling you about, my nieces and nephews, they all happen to be of the same family. They do. And this one here pertains to another niece of mine on an occasion. Let me back up out of that and put it this way. Okay, I was writing something on Facebook, and I happened to use the word ridiculous. And when I read what I had written on Facebook, the word ridiculous stuck out to me because me and this niece of mine had a conversation about the word ridiculous. I'll just read out what I had written. I had said that I had just used the word ridiculous in a posting. Having used that word brought up a memory of a niece and myself. I was going with her somewhere one day. We were on a train talking. She happened to have used the word ridiculous in saying what she'd said. The use of the word to me was indicative that my little niece had a little vocabulary. Being curious, I asked her, where did she get that word from? She said, I got it from you. I was surprised. I hadn't been aware that word had become regular in my vocabulary at that time. So regular that she picked it up. My niece, her name is Chloe, actually, was maybe 11 or 12 years old at that time. I just found that interesting. And then one Facebook friend had responded back by saying, perfect word to describe the absurdity of life. Another Facebook friend has said, nice. It has to be a great feeling knowing that you helped someone paint the word by description. Indeed, those things. And also, still, before we go into the main issue, I know before I had said that henceforward I was going to go into the main issues before I talk about miscellaneous issues. But this is something else that just happened with me personally, and it pertains to my job, where I work at, you know, where I'm able to, you know, how can I put it, continue living, you know, keep going forth with my livelihood, the way I'm living, my lifestyle, and so on and so forth. But there at the workplace, I had a situation. It happened last Friday, actually. I had gotten a call from my immediate supervisor telling me that a colleague of mine had written up what's called a point of contact, meaning when that happens, that means that individuals in the workplace are having some kind of issue. And then a statement is written up by the one who feels the issue has to be addressed. And I was told, you know, to write a statement as to what happened that caused this person to come forth and write a statement against me. And to jump forward a bit, I did write the statement, and I was told that we would then have a meeting come that following Monday, which was just last Monday. And let me tell you, the statement that this person had wrote against me was totally bogus. I mean, just a complete, absolute, outright L-I-E, lie. I mean, I couldn't believe what she had written. I mean, I was dumbfounded. I was flabbergasted. I was all those words. I just couldn't believe what she had written, which was such a lie. But then again, you know, in hindsight, it dawned on me, it came back to me something that had been said a long time ago. And it was said that the greater the lie, the more probability that it will be believed. And that's about the way that was, because the lie she told me was outrageous, totally outrageous. I forget exactly all the words that was in the lie that she told, but basically she had said that I used a string of profanity toward her, directed toward her, which was totally a complete fabrication. It was something that it was just a lie, and I could say that it basically was something that that existed that she heard in her own head, because she definitely couldn't have heard it from me. But also just saying, in the lie that she told per her statement, which is an official document, she had said also that a colleague who was also in the room had also heard it. And because she had said that in her lying statement, you know, that person was contacted and asked if he did hear me say those words. And it turned out that he said, no, I didn't hear James say anything like that. I heard them talking, but James never said nothing like that. And so then now it's now known that basically she lied, because prior to him saying what he said, you know, it was that old thing about, well, it's your word against hers, and we don't know who to believe. So we've got to take it where we got to take it, and da, da, da. But anyway, like I said, I had written a statement, you know, per what I was told, and it was a good thing that I did, because based upon what she had said in that meeting that we were in, I mean, I couldn't think. I mean, it was like my thinking was locked up, honestly. I mean, I even got up from the chair wherein I had been sitting patiently decorously, you know, sitting there with my legs crossed and just listening. But when I heard the nonsense coming out of her statement that she was reading, I couldn't sit no more. I got up and paced the floor because I was ready to walk out. I mean, because what could be said to the lie that she had just put out there? And it hurt me even more. It was even more egregious, because the people that were in the meeting, it was like, again, it was basically her word against mine. But then again, people know my character. They know I wouldn't say no dumb stuff like she said I had said. But again, they had to go by the concept or precepts that, well, it's her word against yours. You know, there were no witnesses, but God bless, there was a witness. Anyway, so I had written a statement, and what I had written here was, I've been requested or directed to write this statement per a conversation a colleague and myself had on the morning of 17 July 2016. The conversation started per a phone call she had gotten from someone working out of the warehouse concerning a package that had been misdelivered and was missing. The package was to have gone to a certain person who works out of building blank blank. When she had finished speaking with the person on the phone, she approached me at my desk and asked, how does she find out who signed for a package? I got up from my desk, and we both went to the computerized tracking system the mailroom has. I asked her what was the tracking number of the package. She didn't have it and had to call the person making the inquiry about the package for the tracking number. The person she called gave her the tracking number, and I proceeded to demonstrate the procedures for finding who signed for the package and when it was signed for. Because I thought the package had been signed for recently, I only looked at the month of July entries and some of the month of June. To digress here, if she had taken time, considering the time she's been in the mailroom, to learn how to track packages, I'd not be writing any of this at this time. Anyway, the entry as to when the package was signed for wasn't found. I then asked her to call the person back and get the date on or about when the package arrived and had been signed for. She called the person back and was given the date the package arrived and was therefore signed for. It turned out the package had arrived during the latter part of the month of May. With that date, I then was able to find the package had been entered into our computerized system. The package had been signed into our computerized tracking system, but it wasn't shown who signed it out of the mailroom. Therefore, concerning this issue, all that is known is she signed the package into the mailroom, but there's no signature indicating who signed it out of the mailroom. However, since any mail packages included that come into the mailroom, I seek to ensure that it goes out of the mailroom the same day. If we're not requested to hold onto it for someone, or if the person isn't available to pick it up right away. As I said, there's no indication that anyone signed the package out of the mailroom. Thus, all that is known at the time, if the package hasn't been yet found, is she signed the package into the mailroom. Now, what's at issue here between her and myself evidently is, I had said to her, due to the situation of the package, this is why it's important you know how to operate the handheld scanner. I forget all the words or excuses she brought up, but I reminded her I had shown her how to operate the handheld scanner and that she had taken notes. However, per those notes she had taken, she still didn't know or elected not to know how to operate the handheld scanner. This was brought to my attention by her electing to make a Xerox copy of the tracking number instead of using or applying the procedures on the handheld scanner. The handheld scanner is what's used to capture a signature of the person who receives the package leaving the mailroom. The signature is then computerized and is how we know who signed for any package. When I had seen her doing this, I asked her, why don't she use her notes? She replied, I lost them. Now, this morning, again, she was giving me a lot of excuses about why she doesn't yet know how to operate the handheld scanner. I reminded her about the notes she said she lost, and then she really started talking a lot of nonsense. She even said during our last conversation about her lack of knowledge of the handheld scanner that I told her to get management to show her how to operate it. Getting management to do anything is not even part of my vocabulary nor mindset. All that's in her head. At that point, I told her, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Basically, I was done talking to her, as I've been on many occasions, in an attempt to relate to her on the operations of the mailroom. It was then that she simply got up from her desk, walked out of the mailroom, didn't tell no one where she was going, didn't even so much as say, I'll be back. This is her normal behavior. If you ask me, her having made a point of contact statement or whatever is basically a deflection from her signature being the responsible one for having signed for the package that's still not found as of this writing. Still does not know how to use the handheld scanner and does not care to learn how. That was my statement that I had written, and it's a good thing I did because, like I said, after I heard the lie that she wrote in her statement, because she also read her statement just as I read mine just then, but I read mine in front of those people also as she did. Like I said, I was dumbfounded. I was basically shocked that she would say something like that about me. And, I mean, it was so egregious that, I mean, I felt sick after the meeting. I really did. And I throughout the whole day, I just felt sick. And you know that sickest feeling that you have in your stomach? Sometimes you get that through, through the loss of a loved one in a relationship. You know, things aren't going well, and like you just figure or feel that something is up, and you get that hurting kind of sensation in the stomach. It seems like it's empty. That's the kind of feeling that I had. But also, I realized that very same feeling is similar to when you're laughing so hard, and you know, the stomach has that it's like a sensation in the stomach. But like when you're laughing, that's a good feeling. It's good. But like when you're depressed like that because of some nonsense, it's that same feeling, but it's from somewhere else. I guess that's what they call, you know, some of the humors of the body. I mean, there are those good humors, then there are those bad humors that do, in fact, exist within the body. I guess the good humors can make us healthy, and those bad humors can make us ill. That's just the way it is. I wanted to have brought that up. But anyway, that situation is more so than not, at this point, you know, being handled in the proper way that it should be. You know, it's more so being handled in my favor as well. And praise be, it's being handled like that because there was a witness to this incident, but not like she said. Just outrageous. But okay, we're gonna have to go into our first music break. I've even talked over, as I usually do, the allotted time of the music break. So right now it's like 10 minutes to the hour. So we're going to have our first song, and that's going to be from Mila J, entitled Don't, from the CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go, and we'll be right back.
Don't play with her, don't be dishonest. Ay. Still not understanding this logic. Ay. back and I'm better. I want you bad as ever. Don't let me just let up. I wanna give you better. Baby, it's whatever. Somebody gotta step up. I'm at somebody's on next up. Be damn if I let them catch up. It's easy to see that you're fed up. I am on a whole nother level. Girl, he only fought you over cause you let him. Fucking girl, I guess he didn't know any better. Girl, that man didn't show any effort. Do all I can just to show you you're special. Certain it's your love that holds me together. Lately, you say he been killing the vibe. Gotta be sick of this guy. Pull up skirt, get in the right. Left hand is steering, the other is gripping your thigh. Light up a spliff and get high. Shawty, you deserve what you've been missing. Looking at you, I'm thinking he must be tripping. Play this song for him, girl, I'm just listening.
Keep it 100, man, ain't no shame. The way he put it down, he deserve everything. Oh, baby, I swear he holds it down. Yeah, he holds it now. So don't.
Okay, welcome back to Andy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You listen to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard a song from Mila J entitled Don't from her Covergirl mixtape. Our call number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And if you call in and do want to talk to me to voice whatever you have to say, do press 1 when you call in. Okay, of course, if you don't press 1, then you won't be able to, I won't be able to engage you into the show. Okay, so going back into this issue that I last left about the issue, well, the personal issue that I just experienced at the workplace over this last week that just passed, something else interesting had happened also due to that situation. After the meeting had been over and after I had gone to other places, I came back to the office, so to speak, and I was sitting at my desk, which, you know, I also work with the computer there as well. And being that I had leisure time, so to speak, I decided to get on the internet, and I happened to have gone to Twitter, I did, yes. And I had read something there that sent me to Wikipedia, a word. I wanted to find out the meaning of a word. And when I had gone to Wikipedia, or I had gone somewhere, I had found the word malignant narcissism. And I found the word, it looked interesting, and I wondered what is that. So I looked the definition up, had gone to Wikipedia, and this is what I got. I got malignant narcissism is a psychological syndrome comprising an extreme mix of narcissism, antisocial personality disorder, aggression, and sadism. The malignant narcissist undermines organizations in which they are involved and dehumanizes the people with whom they associate. And I thought, wow, this describes her character completely. It really did. And then once I got that word, I took, yes, me being me, I took this word to my media supervisor and I read him the definition of this word as I felt it did in fact apply to her. And this was even before they had gotten confirmation from that other employee that I hadn't said those words to her. But still, I just felt that this was of import for people to know. And I took the word to other people, too, to illustrate that there is a definition for her character, for her behavior. Indeed, I'll read that again. Malignant narcissism is a psychological syndrome comprising an extreme mix of narcissism, antisocial personality disorder, aggression, and sadism. The malignant narcissist undermines organizations in which they are involved and dehumanizes the people with whom they associate. I found it interesting because that word just came to me. I mean, somehow or another, well, more so the word was just given to me, so to speak. But I'm saying that like I've said it because something similar had happened to me with another word also, and that word was clairaudient. And in that particular situation, how best to tell this story? As I'm saying, in that particular situation, at that point, I was still working in the same place I am working now, but I worked in a janitorial position. But then again, I also worked in a building where a lot of social workers and psychiatrists worked out of, too. And the thing is, they all liked talking with me. I mean, just so. I guess they liked the way I talked because I guess they figured that, this guy got some sense. I guess that's the way they felt because they all like talking to me and I like talking with them. Anyway, on this particular occasion, I was talking to one of the psychiatrists. And as usual, he told me, well, have a seat, James, sit down. So I sat down. It's work time, understand, but I got leisure time there. Even in that particular job also, I had time to have a leisurely conversation. Anyway, as I sat down, he and I were talking, and somehow or another, the conversation went into when I was living in Berlin, Germany. And as I mentioned in this show about some of my experiences over there, I was mentioning to him the situation of not being able to walk the street without bumping into people or dodging people to avoid bumping into them. And this went on from 1984 until 1987. In 1987, as I'm telling him this story as well as I'm relating it now, I was telling him like in 1987, as usual, I was walking down the street and all of a sudden I heard a voice that said, "Hey guy, you're moving over too much." And when I heard that voice in my head say that, I actually stopped dead in my tracks and said, "That's right. I am moving over too much." I didn't know it before. That voice told me I was moving over too much. Where that voice came from, I know not. All I know is that I heard that voice tell me that in my head. And at that point, well, it's a long story, but I got off the sidewalk. I even stepped into a bus halter, and I watched the people as they went to and fro, you know, past the bus halter. And I'm thinking, you know, this is the way it is. So therefore, in a real sense, I realized then that I wasn't bumping into people. People were more so bumping into me, trying to make me walk, you know, in the street, so to speak. But no. Anyway, I stepped out of that bus halter, I'm still standing there, and I told myself, well, goddammit, if that's the way it is, I accept the challenge. And I stepped out of that bus halter, and people, I didn't move over anymore. After that, I got people out of my way, verbally or physically, and or both. But anyway, so I told that psychiatrist that, but at the same time that I'm telling him this, I realized that he was writing stuff down, but I had no idea he was writing stuff down in reference to me. But anyway, the day went on. I did my work and I went home. And the next day when I came to work, no, let me back up. Before I came to work that next day, because at that point I worked the 3 to 11:30 shift. Anyway, got up that morning and doing things, being on the internet and reading this, reading that. Anyway, I happened to have gone to my dictionary and flipping through dictionary pages, I stopped on the word clairaudient, and I read what that definition said. And what it said was, since one, it said, the power to hear sound said to exist beyond the reach of ordinary experience or capacity as the voice of the dead. Since two said, clairaudience, the power or faculty of hearing something not present to the ear, but regarded as having objective reality. Okay, I read that definition. I thought, interesting, because I had experienced that. You know, like I said, I had told that psychiatrist this the day before, just in what I thought was general conversation. Anyway, when I came to work that afternoon, I was told that my social worker wanted to see me. Because remember, as I said before, I had been in the program there, and I was considered in what was called outpatient. So she was my social worker. I was given a notice telling me that my social worker wanted to see me. And I went up to her office, and I said, yes, I understand that you want to talk to me. She said, Mr. Jones, what's this I hear about you hearing voices? I said, hearing voices? What are you talking about? She said, Roland, that's the psychiatrist's name. He said, Roland told me you was in his office yesterday, and you told him you were hearing voices. I said, no, 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 no. That's not what I told him exactly. I said, matter of fact, it's good that this morning a word came to me, and that word is clairaudient. It is the capacity to hear hear a voice when there is no actual being structure for that voice to come from. I said, that's what I told him, you know, pertaining to the word clairaudience. She said, oh, okay. And that was a good thing, because if I hadn't found that word that morning, I wouldn't have known what to have told her, unless I told her, well, yes, I did tell him I heard a voice, but not in the context in which he said it. Interesting. But yeah, so that happened. And again, this word, I related that story to come back to the word malignant narcissism. That word, again, clairaudient, came to me because I needed it, not knowing I needed it, but it turned out I did. And this word malignant narcissism came to me last Monday, and I needed it to explain a situation. So, having read all that, I'm going to go on now, and we're going to go right on into the topics of the show. And the first topic is police killings. You know, whatever, just saying, when I first was thinking of a way to word the topic, at first I had thought to word the topic as, I forget right now how I was going to word the topic, police killings. Yes, that's how I was going to word it. I was going to word it police killings, you know. But then when I thought about it, that word, that phrase can be interpreted either way. It could, in fact, be interpreted as police killed or those killed by police. And I wanted it to be as precise or exact as possible, so I came up with just police killed. Interesting. That's an indication of we have to say what we mean and not what we want to mean. So anyway, let me give out our calling number here again before I go on into the topic. The calling number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. If you call in, do press 1, because if you don't press 1, you will just be in listening mode and can't say anything, even though you may be bubbling over to say something. So the first article that I have here in front of me is called Bring the Dallas Murderers to Justice and the Killers of Black People Too. And the article starts out by saying, in a country where it's easier to obtain a semi-automatic gun than to obtain health care, a fragile mind can wreak havoc on a fragile political culture. The attacks redrew the battle lines, reconfiguring the us and them into everyone against the attackers. That's something to hold on to. Even as events in Dallas unfold, there are three key things one can say. The first is that these murders are vile and should be unequivocally condemned. They can in no way be understood or excused as retaliation for the well-publicized recent incidents of police shootings of African Americans. Indeed, the effect of such individual acts of violence is not to support the movement against racism, but sabotage it. Its enemies will smear it by association. Potential allies will be more wary. Those within it will be more cautious. Those believed responsible should be found, charged, and prosecuted. This is the appropriate response when people cavalierly and wantonly take the life of another. Anything less would lack justice. Which brings us to the second point. Justice is indivisible. If it is accorded to some and not others, it is not justice but privilege. That is why these horrific assassinations should in no way diminish the urgency or importance of the issue of police killings of African Americans or undermine the Black Lives Matter movement. Demonstrations have periodically turned into clashes with police and even riots. but those have been spontaneous moments in collective protests, at times provoked by police themselves. On the question of nonviolence, there is nothing one could say about Black Lives Matter that could not be said about Martin Luther King's civil rights movement, whose detractors sought to discredit it whenever violence attached itself to its cause. I'm going to have to pause there because we are in now at the time for our next music break. And we're going to hear a song now, another song from Myla J, entitled Friends, also from the CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go, and we'll be right back.
Playing it cool, you would say. I know I wasn't the only one you messed with, but it was good, I was on to the next one. I remember when you started checking up, boy, you must have learned your lesson. Trying to tell me how I always was a blessing. Stayed in the obvious, but you guessed it. Oh, yeah, I got you. Too bad I'm vibing, nigga, I'd be fine without you. Guess you found out all the mother was about shit, and now you're gonna waste your time chasing me, nigga, please. Ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me, nigga, please. I don't wanna hear about it, you can tell your friends about it.
Go tell your friends about it.
Now you wishing you was with me, living life so tough. Even all your friends that I was cool with, they don't know that you be on that bullshit. Even though they didn't think that I was stupid, you did. But I ain't tripping, just don't push it. It's cool, I'ma focus on my vision. Cause you only get one pass and you use it. You use it, amusement. So funny how you used to say, cause I love. So stupid, and it's so amusing. Your effort is so useless, and now you're gonna waste your time chasing me, nigga, please. Ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me, nigga, please. I don't wanna hear about it, you can tell your friends about it. Fucking bitches, now you wishing you were with me, living life so chill. Oh, what the fuck was you thinking? You probably wasn't even thinking. Oh, yeah. Now you gotta tell your friends about it. You gotta tell them how you fucked up on the inside. Bitch like me, what the fuck was you thinking?
Welcome back to Indie Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard the song from Myla J entitled Friends from the CoverGirl mixtape. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And if you do call in, do press 1 to talk. Okay, so I'm on the issue now of police killed. Okay, and the last part that I left off on from this article, I'll reread that last part. It says, on the question of nonviolence, there is nothing one can say about Black Lives Matter that cannot be said about Martin Luther King's civil rights movement, whose detractors sought to discredited whenever violence attached itself to its cause. In 1968, King attended a protest in support of striking garbage workers in Memphis that turned violent, and police responded with batons and tear gas, shooting a 16-year-old boy dead. A column in the Dallas Morning News back then called King the headline-hunting high priest of nonviolent violence, whose roadshow in Memphis was like a torchbearer sprinting into a powder house. A week later, he was dead. Interesting the way they come up with words to describe what they're trying to describe, and wrongly as well, about like that person who I read about in this personal situation I just experienced there at the workplace. Like they say, the bigger the lie, the more is bound to be believed. Or the more outrageous the lie, the more is bound to be believed. Anyway, still with this article here, it says, clearly there is a context. Context is always important. Yes, it is. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, clearly there is a context. He said he was upset about Black Lives Matter. He said he was upset about the recent police shootings. Black Lives Matter did not make black people upset. Video footage of black people being shot did that. Brown went on to say that the suspect was upset at white people. The suspect said he wanted to kill white people, especially white officers. That is true of very few people in America, black, white, or otherwise. Nonetheless, the same Pew survey did show that black and white Americans do see the racial situation very differently, with sizable gaps in their views on how fairly black Americans are treated and how much change is necessary to rectify the situation. But context is not the cause, and the frailties of an individual should not be mistaken for the vulnerabilities of a movement. The suspect also told police he was unaffiliated to any organization. Black Lives Matter was brought into existence in response to state violence. It does not have a monopoly on the grievances and pathologies that emerge as a result of that violence. It can only seek to direct the resentment in constructive ways, given the considerable anger at the relentless exposure of police brutality. Its work on that front has been commendable. The Black Lives Matter movement is essentially demanding nothing more for citizens who are black than the people of Dallas of all races now demand for its law enforcement in blue, justice. And the article goes on to talk about the videoed evidence of Alton Starling in Baton Rouge, and the other guy. I keep forgetting his name. It's terrible that I forget these names. Like we know, there are so many. Anyway, moving right along from that article, I got another article here. It says this article pertains to the guy who killed the police there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And this article here goes on to say that the man who ambushed and killed three law enforcement officers in Louisiana purportedly described his actions as a necessary evil. In a self-described handwritten manifesto that an Ohio man says was emailed to him by the gunman less than an hour before the shooting. In the letter, Long said he expected people who knew him wouldn't believe he would commit such horrendous acts of violence. He wrote that he viewed his actions as necessary to create substantial change within the American police force. Police have said officers first saw the shooter at a convenience store at 8:40 a.m. Sunday. Within 2 minutes, there were reports of shots fired. Police gunned down Long after he fatally shot three officers and wounded three others. It was his 29th birthday. The video caped 2 weeks of turmoil for Baton Rouge that began with the killing of a black man, Alton Starling, during a scuffle with two white police officers at a convenience store. We all know that story by now. Excuse me. In the self-described manifesto, going back to the shooter himself, the killer, murderer, I guess we can call him that. In the self-described manifesto, which was started off with the words, "Peace, family," Long wrote about a concealed war between good cops and bad cops and said he felt obligated to bring the same destruction that bad cops continue to inflict upon my people. Long, they're talking about him now, more about his history says Long, a black military veteran whose last known address was in Kansas City, Missouri, spent 5 years in the Marine Corps. He served one tour in Iraq before being honorably discharged. Before the Baton Rouge shooting, Long posted rambling internet videos calling for violent action in response to what he considered oppression. And then he goes on to say that he says, I know I will be vilified by the media and police. I see my actions as a necessary evil that I do not wish to partake in, nor do I enjoy partaking in, but must partake in order to create substantial change within the American police force and judicial system. And that's what it said that he had written. But again, this is what we are told. And as we know, this is what we are told by the same police who can never convict any police person who has murdered some unarmed black person without justification. So what do we believe? What do we know to believe? The shooter is dead. The person himself is dead. And all that we have are what they tell us are his video postings of him talking. I saw one of them and thought, oh, well, anybody could say that. That don't mean that they would just go out and pick up a gun and do what he did or do what they said he did. But again, we don't know. And like I always say, in these days, I'm highly skeptical of anything that government officials tell us or what we are told per our media. Because remember, they told us that Lee Harvey Oswald killed John F. Kennedy, and by now we learned it by rote in Dallas, Texas, Texas School Book Depository, sixth floor, with a Mannlicher Carcano rifle, telescopic. We know all that by rote. I mean, come on, they drill that into us, report after report. And it turns out to have not even been true. But yet that is still being reported as it being true by the established official media. Out MFing rages. Anyway, I got another article here that says Baton Rouge mayor seems convinced his cops aren't racist. The article says that Kip Holden, mayor, president of East Baton Rouge Parish, speaks at a news conference at police headquarters in Baton Rouge on July 6th. And it says that he was asked the question, does the Baton Rouge Police Department have a problem with racial profiling? Depends on who you ask. If you ask Baton Rouge Mayor Kip Holden, the answer is no. Holden said, basically, this guy Holden said, bullshit, it says Holden said. They have bullshit in quotes. In response to claims by Baton Rouge residents that the city's police force regularly uses discriminatory tactics in minority neighborhoods. I'll pay for the polygraph test. They have him in quotes having said that I'll pay for the polygraph test. They're not stopping and frisking people at random. Just do what is expected of you, and you won't be stopped and frisked. While there is no doubting Holden's convictions, his statements seem at odds with the experiences of black people who interact with the Baton Rouge police on a regular basis. And this guy Holden, people, he's black. He's an African-American. But as we know, in a real sense, in this context, when it comes to justice and or injustice, color has nothing to do with it, nothing. Some would argue to the contrary, but in actuality, in fact, no, color has nothing to do with it. It's all about a mindset. It's all about what's in a person's head. Again, go back to that female having lied on me the way she did. She's black. She's black. Color has nothing to do with this. It's all about a mindset. Minorities, the article goes further to say that minorities are very wary of police and often afraid of them. In Baton Rouge, Michelle Fournet, a local criminal defense lawyer, told Reuters, concerns about racial-motivated policing in the city has been circulating for years. State police from New Mexico and Michigan spoke up about Baton Rouge officers' brutal behavior toward black people after working alongside them during Hurricane Katrina. I heard some things about, well, just saying, I'm breaking away from the article here to say that I heard some things about the goings-on there in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And some of the things that I heard, they sound unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, but again, things that police do, to the average person, not knowing what police do, or even an inkling of what police do, they wouldn't be believed. Case in point, when that police person shot Oscar Grant. That's the name I was trying to think of last week, when that police person shot Oscar Grant there in California in that BART train station. He just pulled it. Oscar Grant was on the ground in handcuffs, and the MF shot him in the back. That police person shot Grant in the back, pulled his gun from his holster, and just shot him in the back. And the thing was, the media actually, viewing the videotape that was taped of it, they put forth the excuse for that police person. He thought he was going for his taser. Who told them that? But anyway, that police person, I guess he was so, well, look, if you want to, you know, get off this thing, go with what's been put out, that you were going for your taser. Although that cop knew MFing well, he was not going for his MFing taser. He knows that. Taser don't feel not like no GUN, don't feel nothing like no gun. He knew what he was doing exactly. It's just unbelievable. But again, if you don't know these things, you would never even imagine these things would take place. But again, the things that happened during Hurricane Katrina, I was told that police, out-of-state police people were actually having a field day killing black people. I was told that, and from a seemingly reputable source. Cynthia McKinney, she was some kind of a political person down there in that area. She even, I think, had a seat in Congress, but I guess she was too radical for them, and then lost the next election, or she just left or whatever. I don't know the full story of why she left her political position. But yes, she had written that police were actually killing black people down there, having target practice. You know, they talked about the looting and whatnot, and to them, any black person was considered to be a looter. Outrageous. But anyway, the article goes further to say that after police shot Alton Sterling to death in the parking lot of the Baton Rouge convenience store early this month, the city's policing standards have come under sharp scrutiny. And it goes on to talk about how in the weeks that followed the protests erupted and so on and so forth. It says that one of the officers killed in the shooting, Montrell Jackson, well, this is one of the officers killed by that sniper, we can't call him a sniper, but by the shooter there in Baton Rouge, this officer whose name was Montrell Jackson, a black guy, they said who was black, had written on Facebook about the struggles he faced both in uniform as a police officer and in plain clothes as a civilian. And it says that he posted saying that I'm tired physically and emotionally. I swear to God I love this city, but I wonder if this city loves me. In uniform, I get nasty, hateful looks, and out of uniform, some consider me a threat. These are trying times, he added. Please don't let hate infect your heart. Sound like a decent enough person, although a police person. Again, I'll say that. He sounded like a decent enough person, although a police person. Okay, right now I'm going to go on into something else. I had meant to read this into the show last week, but it kind of time flies. Anyway, this article I have here says first black Miss Alabama suspended after calling Dallas cop killer a martyr. I found that interesting. It says here that KALYN Kaylin Chapman James was placed on administrative leave from Florida station, from a Florida, I guess, radio TV station, following the controversial comments she made in a two-minute video she posted to Facebook. The TV station said in a statement, South Florida PBS does not condone the personal statements made by one of its independent contractors regarding the events in Dallas. It placed the contractor on administrative leave while it actively and carefully looked further into the matter and will determine additional course of actions based on its thorough review of the matter. The station added, "We do not condone any suggestions that terrorism is acceptable or that it should be tolerated." In the clip, the 1993 Miss Alabama says she doesn't feel bad for the five Dallas cops who were fatally shot when 25-year-old sniper Micaiah Xavier Johnson went on a shooting rampage during an anti-police brutality protest last week. I'm dealing with a bit of guilt. Now, this is what she says, this former Miss Alabama. She says, I'm dealing with a bit of guilt because I don't feel sad for the officers that lost their lives, and I know that that's not really my heart. It says here that James said in the video, which had been viewed more than 556,000 times since it was posted Sunday. I value human life, and I want to feel sad for them, but I can't help but feel like the shooter was a martyr, she said. Now it says here further that James, in a follow-up Facebook post Tuesday, says she is being threatened and harassed and called awful names regarding the comments she made. The ex-beauty queen clarified her position, saying, one, Makaia Johnson is not a hero. Two, I do not condone violence against anyone. I am against violence. I would like to see an end to black on black crime, white on white crime, black on white crime, white on black crime. All killing needs to stop. Three, she says, I want healing and peace for our nation, and it will come when we can process our feelings, address the ones that don't align with our values, like I did, and reach out for help instead of causing more conflict or taking innocent lives. So they came down on her pretty hard for her voicing her feelings, what she thought. And then, previous to that, before I had even read her article, I had posted this on Facebook. I had said, yes, blacks of an intellectual stature should ponder this. What was this guy? How should we mentally process this guy's actions? Should we see his actions in the context of black rage, as pontificated by Greer and Cobbs, two psychologists who wrote a book on this phrase? Indiscriminate killing ought not ever be considered a plus. Yet how would we consider a relative of one murdered by police taking the law of vengeance in his or her own hands? Vengeance? Question mark. Well, let's substitute the word vengeance with the word retribution. Curious. It's words that assist us in our thinking, and it's words that cause confusion in our thinking. Okay, I'm going to have to go into another music break right now. I see currently it's 27 after the hour. I should have paused at 25 after the hour, but I'm getting better because I'm keeping my eye on the clock. So anyway, we're going to go into our next song, and this is going to be Diamond, again, Mila J., Diamond featuring, the song is called Diamond featuring Drake and Future, and again from the CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Phone's blowing up right now, but I ain't tryna talk, I'm tryna feel the fight. All my bitches fucked up right now, but got the jewelry on me, now I'm tryna keep it tight. Now my nigga, he been trippin' on me all week. Now I'm tryna get my mind off the shit, and you know what I need. Yeah, and I don't give a damn who sees, I'm tryna be. Slippin' on, don't bury on for no reason. Poppin' tags up an echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the phone right now if she worth it. Ballin' in the middle of the club, no jersey. He don't want no liquor cause he been drinking that dirty. Bring the eights by the case, my bitches with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me.
And you know what I need from you when I get home. You better not be on the phone talking up a storm like you usually do. Talking to your friends like you usually do. Telling them I never spend time with you.
It's hard to find a time we were
slipping on down, carry on for no reason. Popping tags up a echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the floor right now if she worth it. Falling in the middle of the club, no jersey. He don't want no liquor cause he been drinking that dirty. Bring the ace, buy the cake, my bitches with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing.
And if you took it, you can vouch for me. I did it my way, you can vouch for me. I put the cocaine and the powder in the couch on me. Whenever I step outside the house, I get the Glocky on me. Bad bitches wanna come by the paparazzi on me. I got so many bad bitches that I barely wanna. I'm barely paying attention, baby, I need substance. I know you spent some time putting on your makeup and your outfit, but
welcome back to Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard the song from Mila J entitled Diamonds featuring Drake and Future from her CoverGirl mixtape. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And when you do call in, do press 1 if you want to talk. Okay, moving right along, we're going into another article. This is more so an essay written by someone named Jamila Lemieux. The last name is spelled L-E-M-I-E-U-X, and this was written on July 8th. I had meant to read it into the show previously, but I'm having time to do so tonight. Anyway, what she says here is that the killing of five police officers was senseless, but we cannot let that disrupt the demands that police violence against citizens end as well. We have witnessed massive outcries against police violence in the United States since August 9, 2014, the day unarmed Ferguson teen Michael Brown was shot to death and left in the street for more than 4 hours. In the days that followed, heavily militarized police forces would respond to protests addressing both the 18-year-old's killing, and a long history of abusive policing in the area, complete with tanks and tear gas, curfews, and the National Guard. The small Midwestern suburb that had previously been unknown to most outside St. Louis would become synonymous with both police brutality and citizens' resistance. The force with which protesters were met was famously documented by members of the national media. The freedom that American journalists typically take for granted were disregarded in the most public of ways. As we look at the events of the past week, this context is important. The videotaped death of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile in St. Paul, Minnesota. That's the name I was trying to think of earlier. Philando Castile in Minnesota area have both made national headlines and sparked outrage, with there being clear agreement between media and those broadly painted as Black Lives Matter supporters that these men should not have died and that they died because of reckless racist policing. But just one day after the Facebook Live video recorded by Castile's fiancée horrified people across the world, 12 people were shot at an otherwise peaceful Dallas protest against police violence. All but one of those shot were police officers. 5 of them died. A black female protester was also injured while shielding her children. Black Lives Matter organizers publicly condemned the mass shooting in the way that people of color and Muslims often do, as if it should go without saying that the anti-police violence movement has been exactly that, a public cry for an end to abusive policing, not the lies of police. This sort of humanity is not often seen when a police officer has needlessly taken the life of a civilian. In fact, police message boards have found chilling expressions to the contrary over and over again. We know little about who is responsible for what happened in Dallas, and if history has taught us anything, we should not rush to accept the official narrative that has been presented, and will say nothing about the narrative at this moment. But here is what we must understand. There has been this troubling thread throughout the past 2 years of pundits and politicians weighing in on the broken relationship between black people and law enforcement, that there is great, if not equal, accountability on both sides. That somehow black Americans have to bear some of the responsibility for the animus many of them hold toward the police, which she's saying is ridiculous, and I agree. When a deranged man came from Baltimore to Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, an area known for the abusive practices of law enforcement, and ambushed 2 police officers last year, there was an immediate response of, see, both sides are suffering. But while those murders, like the ones in Texas last night, were totally unjustified and heartbreaking, it is unreasonable to suggest that police face the same danger at the hands of civilians that civilians face at their hands. Were that the case, considering the number of weapons in black communities across this country, we probably would have seen more of these horrible killings. The danger of American policing doesn't just leave black people dead. It finds them behind bars, saddled with unreasonable fines and tickets, unable to obtain employment, afraid to call for help when it is needed, and dealing with the trauma that accompanies the knowledge that the hands that took an oath to protect you are legally emboldened to do quite the opposite. The police cannot say the same of black people and being hated, protested, called pigs, and even the target of tragic yet frequent attacks does not equate to centuries of abuse. This is not a defense for violence against police. May our humanity not wither to such a place that the targeting of arbitrary cops feels like justice. May we challenge the overseer-like entitlement of so many police in ways that don't reduce the best of us, our activists and leaders, to the worst of them. This is a call to stay vigilant in keeping the proper narrative alive. Alton Sterling and Philando Castile died senselessly in the hands of law enforcement officers, like many Americans before them. We must continue to challenge a nation that has allowed that sort of killing to happen over and over again. We can walk and chew gum at once, and we can mourn the slain Dallas officers as we continue to push police violence. We mustn't apologize for demanding that police people are treated with the same rights as others. Nothing has changed. It says here that she's also the magazine senior editor for Ebony Magazine. I hadn't known that. That's Jamila Lemieux. It's spelled spelled L-E-M-I-E-U-X. She's also on Twitter. And based upon this article, I've sent her a Twitter, friend request, you might want to call it. But anyway, in response to her article, I had written this here. I had written that I like the fact that you're able to see the forest exist because of the trees. There are many of us who still bemoan the situation that they are unable to see the forest because of the trees. Such are those who aren't able to see both sides of this issue in contrast. Basically, such individuals are only able to fathom the violence against police as a supreme horror. yet the violence police do to black people isn't even considered. If it's reflected on at all, it's in the sense that the police ought not be blamed for only doing their jobs. Then, too, nobody is perfect, including police. They, too, make mistakes. FOH. Fuck out of here. Keep up the good work, Jamila. Unafraid minds like yours are surely needed out here. I've only heard of you since this morning. I have the good fortune to have seen you on MSNBC's Joy Reid show. And I asked her also, are you aware of Dr. Stacey Patton? She too has your level of intellectual bravery, so to speak. Or perhaps you're on hers. I'm appreciative of the both of you. We need more than just the two of you out here. Indeed. That was my response to her having read her article. And also, I had written this here as well. Speaking of false narratives, there's surely one coming forth from police. Police have always been targets in a sense. They make themselves targets by becoming police, face to face with criminals. Some prone to crime are of the mindset if caught, they are holding court in the street. Going to jail for those of that mindset isn't an option. Now, when it comes to police persons killing unarmed citizens as a result of a traffic stop, this is a situation that requires a different narrative, hence Black Lives Matter. And then someone else had posted this. I happened to have read this on Facebook. They had said, a dangerous situation is being set up in the U.S. as a result of the last attack in Baton Rouge. The public is being conditioned to accept that opposition to state terrorism in the form of extrajudicial killings by police officers might be a form of domestic terrorism. It is vitally important that we stand together with our young folk in BLM, Black Lives Matter, and all of the other opposition groups. Despite any reservations and questions, resistance against oppression is a human right, and rights are not given, they are assumed by the oppressed. We must not be silenced, and we will not be intimidated. And then, someone had posted this here, but I'm only reading this because of Dr. Stacey Patton's response to what someone had written via Facebook. They wrote, if you're wondering, Micaiah Johnson is a mentally disturbed lone wolf who is not a representative of or affiliated with any program, organization, movement, or ideology directly connected to the larger black community and does not represent our views in general toward white people, the police, or America. He was a dude with some guns who did a horrible thing. He's just like Dylan Roof, except he didn't get to go to Burger King and they blew him up with a remote control bomb. I'm just saying, that's what happened. And in response to that, Dr. Stacey Patton had responded to that by saying, Micaiah Johnson is like Dylan Roof. Really bad comparison. Well, that's a question. Micaiah Johnson is like Dylan Roof? Question mark. Really bad comparison. But I do understand the instinct to disavow Johnson's actions to let folks know that you think what he did was awful. But like Dylan Roof? Nah. More like Nat Turner, Gabriel Prosser, Denmark Vesey, and Colin Ferguson. Racism will make you mentally disturbed. And quite frankly, the bits of misinformation we're being fed by law enforcement and the media are still not adding up for me. And I wrote, thus right, Dr. Stacey Patton. I got something else here that I had written here on Facebook. I had written, Texas must really be a crazy place. Remember, that's where they figured they could kill John F. Kennedy and blame it on Oswald, and everyone would believe it. Everyone except a few didn't believe it. That few are now the many who do not believe that Lee Harvey Oswald shot and killed John F. Kennedy from the sixth floor of the Texas School of Book Depository building. Texas must really be a crazy place. I haven't read this article yet, but somehow this seems like a contrived deflection, a situation of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. This is sick. And I'm saying this in reference to, I mean, really, I guess it does sound like, a conspiracy theory. But, hey, for all we know, this guy, I mean, he could have been paid to do what he did. And then again, we don't really know if he was really blown up or not. This is what we're told by the police. I mean, you know, we don't know. And we just don't know. Anyway, I would further to say that reading the article is now known. I said reading the article is now known. The center of this action took place within a two-block radius of where President John F. Kennedy was killed. Having read much of that assassination, it's known that the area is basically an area of business and governmental buildings, and black folk don't live in that area. It will be difficult for someone black to move around freely and or individually or in groups without being accosted in that area. That's what I say to that. And also I got something here in reference to I have seen a video interview with Megyn Kelly and D.L. Hughley. And based upon that video, I just had to write this on Facebook. I had said, can we imagine the situation of a slave having a conversation about freedom with his or her slave master or mistress? Well, need not imagine those conversations were had. No, I said, well, need not imagine those conversations were had. Yes, they were. Neither actually understood the other. Why was it so hard for one to understand that no one wants to be a slave? Having these conversations with many whites, can we imagine the situation of a slave having a conversation about freedom with his or her slave master or mistress? I already said that part. I wrote it twice, unfortunately. But anyway, that's what I'm saying there. You know, like concerning the way black and white people in today think about this situation. Unfortunately, our thinking is somewhat diametrically opposed, so to speak. Even in terms of, you know, the slogan "Black Lives Matter," it's like black people, we realize that our lives do matter. It's not even about should matter. We know our lives do matter, which is what really infuriates us when one of us is just killed without cause and without justification and unarmed. But yet, white people don't seem to understand that. I mean, they just don't understand it. They don't understand why we come forth with the slogan that black lives matter, and then they want to retort with all lives matter. Because, again, as I said earlier in the show, they just can't conceive of a police officer just, well, I'll say it that way first. They just can't conceive of a police officer just wantonly murdering somebody like that without cause. And it could be because, hell, that's what they don't care. And then again, that's what they would rather do themselves. I had also written there in reference to still the Megyn Kelly and D.L. Hughley so-called conversation that they were having. One of my Facebook friends had said something, and I had written back, "It's obvious, then naturally." I said, "It's obvious, then naturally indifferent. However, indifferent but not obvious is the issue. A question is, how can one be not obvious to wrong, nor oblivious?" No, that's what it says. I said, "If oblivious, then naturally indifferent. However, indifferent but not oblivious is the issue. A question is, how can one be not oblivious to wrong and thus injustice and still be indifferent?" And I had written further, "I can kind of understand this when I contrast my feelings of indifference to any police person being killed in the context of an innocent black person defending him or herself against abuse, or even in the context of some African-American feeling a kind of symbiosis with reference to kinship to a murdered African-American and thus being consumed with the mindset of retribution against the offender or anyone representative of the offense and the offender. Yes, I'm one who is cognizant of wrong, then too, I'm cognizant of right. Yet there are times when what is wrong becomes blurred. By the same token, there are times when what's right too becomes blurred. In this sense, right can be made wrong, and wrong can be made right. WTF, what the fuck?" And then also, I had written this here. I was watching something on someone had posted on Facebook, an interview that Roland Martin and Cindy Williams had on her show. It was something about Roland Martin had come on her show to correct some erroneous statements that she had made. They weren't erroneous. Yeah, to her, having Roland Martin on her show was just about ratings, primarily because she didn't care what he said. But But one thing that that stuck out to me was, like, during the end of that interview, she was asking him something about, you know, that talk that black parents are said to have with their children. And this is what I had written or responded to. I had written on Facebook, I liked this until they went into what should black parents do to keep their children safe during police encounters. The killing of Philando Castile put the lie to all that black parents are told to their children in these circumstances. It's not on us. It does not matter what we do or don't do in such circumstances. All revolves and or is determined by the police person who accosts us. We are victims in such situations. Then I wrote further. Speaking from within this often repeated paradigm, the victim ends up being blamed for his or her own death if it's taken to that extreme. And then, you know, still in reference to that narrative about, you know, the conversation that, well, because of so many of these happenings, they have blacks on TV talking about, you know, that they have to have the talk with their child about, you know, being responsive to police personnel, you know, being respectful and courteous and saying yes, sir, all that nonsense. Anyway, and also being afraid. They tell them, you know, don't be afraid, but how can you not be afraid? Excuse me. I guess if you're afraid. Anyway, I had written something on Facebook. I had said, "Hey, y'all, we need to begin to refute that lie that's being spread across the country and the world that African Americans are afraid of the police. Certainly, there are those of us who are afraid and have been so in every generation. Yet there are those of us who are not afraid of the police in this generation as in every other generation." Such a narrative of us being afraid of police will only serve to embolden a real punk police person to try bullying us. After all, constantly hearing of how afraid African Americans are afraid will only help in putting the truth to the lie, hence more of them getting up in our faces. And also, in reference to what I had just written there, those things about being afraid of the police and so on and so forth, and police murders of... excuse me, and police murdering black people. You know, excuse me again. Back in the day when lynching was prevalent in this country, on up to 1930s and 1940s, there were poets around. There was this poet named Claude McKay. He wrote a poem back then. And it's curious to me as to why. Well, I'll say it firstly like this. It's curious to me as to why. Wait a minute, excuse me. It's curious to me as to why, you know, poets aren't writing stuff like this today in reference to these police killings of African Americans. But then again, perhaps they are. But perhaps we are just not privy to these poems as they pertain to police violence against black people today. But anyway, this guy named Claude McKay, a poet, during the Harlem Renaissance situation, so it said, the 1930s and 40s, or 1920s, 30s and 40s, he was back then, and, you know, a lot of lynching and stuff was taking place in the era of segregation. He wrote this poem. Actually, I got two poems by him that I'm going to read into the show. His name is Claude McKay, and I heard of him a long time ago when I first began reading. He says here, "If we must die, let it not be like hogs hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while round us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our cues, at our cursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us, though dead. Oh, kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men we'll face the murderous, cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying, but fighting back." We need more words like that today. I mean, you know, that goes against the current paradigm and the current paradigm about, you know, obeying. Well, naturally, it's only natural to obey law enforcement. But then again, when law enforcement don't obey the law itself and or the precepts of our constitutional rights, I mean, what do we do? I mean, we have a right to ask what's going on. Why are you stopping me? But according to the current narrative that's being put out, don't even ask him that. Don't even ask him, why are you stopping me? You know, I don't know, but I just hope that I'm left alone because, I'm one of those people, I want to know, you know, why are you stopping me? I mean, come on. I mean, what have I done? I mean, what's going on? I'm one of those people. I want to know why. That's just like a niece of mine has said, it's a long story, but she has said that sometimes another niece of mine has said to me that sometimes somebody will say hello to her in the street and, you know, really sound as if they know her from back in the day or whatever. And she says she don't know who the hell this person is, but she responds in kind, like, oh, yeah, hello, yeah, long time no see. And don't even ask the person, by the way, who are you? She don't ask that question. So she leaves this person not knowing who they were or whatever. And I say, you mean you don't ask them at all who they are? I said, that's me. I said, no, that's not me. I'm different than that. If I'm anywhere, somebody say, hey, James, what's up? And if I don't recognize the person, I'll say, well, nothing much, but by the way, who are you? Where do I know you from? I'm asking those questions. I'm not like my niece. I don't know why my niece isn't like me. I mean, because she's been around me enough to be like me, but I guess she figured, why go through all that? Just play the role. I don't know. But anyway, this other poem by Claude McKay is called Baptism. And in some way, I will say that I can relate to this because, I mean, being at the age that I am now and also being in my 20s and not thinking I even reached the age of 30, not because of criminality, but just because of how people were coming off on me, primarily because they felt that I shouldn't be the way I am being black. I never understood that nonsense, you know. I just didn't. Case in point concerning that, you know, I've said this before, but people would ask me, well, whenever, wherever, how come you never smiled? And I'd have to tell them, I haven't heard anything funny. And then again, I wasn't being flippant or trying to be, smart or, you know, what's that word? Not, you know, being rude. I wasn't being rude. They asked me a question, I answered them. And they say, how come you never smile? I haven't heard nothing funny. Excuse me. You know, hell, you're not smiling. I don't ask you how come you're not smiling. Shh. Anyway, still, this poem here is called Baptism. And it's, again, by Claude McKay. And I can relate to this, having come through and gone through what I've gone through and come through, and I'm still here. It says here, into the furnace let me go alone. Stay you without in terror of the heat. I will go naked in, for thus 'tis sweet, into the weird depths of the hottest zone. I will not quiver in the frailest bone. You will not note a flicker of defeat. My heart shall tremble not its fate to meet. My mouth give utterance to any moan. The yawning oven spit forth fiery spears. Red aspish tongue shout wordlessly my name. Desire destroys, consumes my mortal fears, transforming me into a shape of flame. I will come out, back to your world of tears, a stronger soul within a finer frame. I liked that poem then, and I like that poem now. Indeed I do, and indeed I did. Anyway, we're coming up on the last 2 minutes of the show. But also, before I do sign off, let me say that as of tomorrow, Dollhouse Radio will be in our anniversary week. Sorry to say, but true to say, I'm not sure how many years Dollhouse has been on the air or in existence, but it's been at least 6 years now, I do believe, because I know I've been with Dollhouse now for at least 2 of those years, maybe 3 of those years. I'd have to calculate to see. But anyway, so Dollhouse Radio is going into our anniversary week next week. But however, I'll be back next week. So until then, I'm going to be signing off with a song from our producer entitled You Don't Deserve Me by India Morell. And here we go. And we'll hear us next week. Till then, everybody have a good night.